With thy sharp teeth, this knot intrinsicate of life at once untie. Poor venomous fool, be angry and dispatch. William Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra, Act 5, Scene 2. My name is Becca Ryswick, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories. History is full of engaging and fascinating topics, whether we go back to the dawn of time or only a few years ago. So settle in as we explore one of my favorites. Happy New Year! 2021 has barely begun and is already off to a concerning start. So let's take a break from current events and travel back about 2,050 years to 30 BCE Egypt. I'll paint you a word picture of the scene. Julius Caesar has been murdered. Rome is in chaos. Julius Caesar's chosen successor, Caesar Augustus, born as Gaius Octavian, was marching on his political rival, Mark Antony. Antony's defeat was swift, and the general took his own life, falling on his sword. This left his lover, Cleopatra, in a difficult position. What was she to do about the new ruler of Rome, particularly after she had blatantly thrown her lot in with his enemy? According to common knowledge, the pharaoh took her own life with a venomous snake. Octavian allows the lovers to be buried by Egyptian custom in Cleopatra's tomb, which has since been lost to the annals of history. Cleopatra has found herself immortalized in modern culture for her beauty, various love affairs, and tragic death. She could easily fill the role of femme fatale, or at least that's how she's often painted. But who was she really? Was she a good pharaoh? A devoted lover? A master manipulator? There are many questions about the last true pharaoh of Egypt, many of which will never be answered to satisfaction simply because history is messy. And especially so when a woman in power comes into the scene. So, I want to take a quick look at who exactly Cleopatra was, and how she died. As always, let's take a step back from the topic at hand to see how it fits into the grand scheme of things. In this case, that means taking a look at both Egypt and Rome. We'll start with Egypt. Cleopatra was the last of the Ptolemaic dynasty, who ruled for roughly 3 centuries, from approximately 305 to 30 BCE. An interesting note on the Ptolemies is that they were technically Greek and not Egyptian. The first of the line was, aptly, Ptolemy I. Ptolemy was one of Alexander the Great's generals, and gained control over Egypt when Alexander's empire was divided following his death. The line remained pure due to inbreeding. In nearly every case, siblings wed, with a few exceptions involving uncles and nieces. Now, most of the Ptolemies didn't put any effort into ingratiating themselves to the Egyptian people. Cleopatra was an exception. It is important to note that women of the era were educated, especially Greek women of royal or noble birth. Cleopatra's father, Ptolemy XII, prepared her to assume the throne of Egypt himself. Cleopatra went beyond the Greek Hellenistic education she was given and learned Egyptian, as well as participating in Egyptian festivals and ceremonies. We'll get back to Cleopatra shortly, because by the time of her reign, Rome was moving into the region. So this is a good time to interject with some Roman history. Beware the Ides of March. That would be a warning from a soothsayer to Julius Caesar in Shakespeare's play named for the protagonist. The Ides of March correlates to March 15th on the modern calendar. In this case, the warning is about March 15th, 44 BCE. The date that Julius Caesar was stabbed to death by 40 or so Roman senators. This led to massive political upheaval and reshaping of the Roman Empire. This is, of course, a huge story in and of itself, and if you have interest in political history, I recommend checking it out. There's a lot of intrigue and betrayal housed within the story. The important part we need to take away from it in this particular case is an overview of what Mark Antony and Octavian were doing. On one hand, we have Mark Antony, one of Julius Caesar's trusted generals, though he seemed to have fallen out of favor. Following the death of Julius Caesar, Antony was able to assume control of the Caesarian party and began the process of moving Rome forward from the tragedy. However, many of the senators didn't trust Antony. On the other side, we have Julius Caesar's adopted heir, his nephew Octavian. Octavian is largely backed by the Senate. Some years after they decide to split the Roman Empire between them, Octavian learns about Antony and Cleopatra's marriage, which gives him the incentive he needs to march on Egypt. By marrying Cleopatra, the Senate see Antony as planning a rebellion against the unity of the Roman Empire. Let's pause again and jump back to Cleopatra. Her reign began in 52 BCE with the death of her father. At first, per her father's wishes, she was a co-ruler alongside her brother, Ptolemy XIII, who she may or may not have married. Although within a year, Cleopatra seems to have attempted to declare herself the sole ruler of Egypt. This was short-lived, though, and by 48 BCE, she was forced to flee Alexandria. Cleopatra, recognizing that likely the only way she would regain complete control of Egypt, ingratiated herself to Julius Caesar. Her plan worked, and the Roman forces favored her over her brother. She also allegedly had a child with Caesar at this time, Caesarion. Cleopatra also strongly tied herself to the Egyptian goddess Isis. Isis is often linked to royalty as the wife of Osiris, the king of Egypt. Ptolemaic queens tended to tie themselves to this goddess. It is possible that it was a way of validating the Ptolemy line by linking themselves to Isis, who is, in a roundabout way, sort of a queen mother to the royal line. None of them went as far as Cleopatra did in cementing this link, though. So how did all of this come together to culminate in the death of Cleopatra? Well, once Octavian had decided to declare war on her, we have the Battle of Actium in 31 BCE. This was a naval conflict between Antony's forces and Octavian's. Technically, Egyptian forces were there as well, but retreated rather than actually engaging in any of the fighting. Shortly before the battle, Quintus Dellius, one of Antony's generals, defected and brought with him Antony's battle plans. Octavian's fleet now knew of Antony's strategies and were able to counter him at every turn. While there are several differing opinions on what exactly happened during the battle, the outcome is not in question. Octavian soundly defeated Antony. With this defeat, Antony's supporters began defecting. By August of 30 BCE, his naval fleet and cavalry had left him nearly to a man. Cleopatra, seeing how things were going, had a tomb constructed for her and Antony in Alexandria. In short order, Octavian's forces had Egypt. They were in Alexandria. Cleopatra fled to her tomb with a few attendants and sent a message to Antony that she had committed suicide. Believing she was already dead and recognizing that, for all intents and purposes, he had already lost the war, Mark Antony killed himself. According to the historian Plutarch, Antony was brought to Cleopatra, still alive but mortally wounded, and died in her arms. The story that most people know from here out is that of Cleopatra's suicide. Rather than be paraded in Rome as a symbol of Octavian's victory, Cleopatra and her attendants incited a snake, either an asp or an Egyptian cobra, to bite them, and then died of the venom. The more popular tales say that the snake was smuggled to her in a basket of figs, and that a missive was sent to Octavian by the queen asking that she be buried with Antony. When Octavian's men arrived, it was too late. Cleopatra was dead, and her attendants were dead or dying. But what do modern archaeologists and historians have to say about this story? If Cleopatra did commit suicide, the consensus seems to be that it was likely not by snake bite. Firstly, asp venom incites a long and painful death, assuming the snake injects enough in the bite to kill. Cleopatra is described as having a quick and painless death. Cobra venom would be more likely in this descriptor, however, cobras are fairly large and likely could not have been smuggled to her. Additionally, they eject all of their venom in one bite, so one snake would not have been able to kill three women in quick succession. The more likely alternative is that Cleopatra was killed by a poisonous concoction, perhaps including the venom of a snake. Two proponents of this theory are Christoph Schaefer, who discusses this in a CNN interview, and Stacy Schiff, author of Cleopatra, A Life. The next big question is, did Cleopatra even commit suicide, or was she murdered? Well, odds are good that it was, in fact, suicide. If she was murdered, the only real suspect is Octavian, who had no real reason to murder her considering he already had her at his mercy. Much of the information we have surrounding her death is from Octavian's memoirs, though, so it is possible he fudged the truth somewhere about Cleopatra's death, but again, it seems unnecessary. Octavian did respect Cleopatra's wishes, and her and Mark Antony were buried together, though, as I said at the beginning, the tomb has been lost to time. Following Cleopatra's death, her son Caesarion reigned for 18 days before Octavian had him killed. Thus ended the Ptolemaic dynasty. Egypt became part of the Roman Empire until the Byzantines conquered it in the early 7th century, soon after which the Arab Islamic Empire gained control, and then the Ottoman Empire, and so on and so forth. So that's what happened. Cleopatra went down in history as a seductress, having won the affections of two powerful Roman leaders. We remember her from Shakespeare and film, as Sarah Pruitt put it, as the beautiful doomed protagonist in one of history's most famous romantic dramas. If you enjoyed learning about Cleopatra, I would recommend checking out Plutarch's Lives, specifically the section on Antony, Stacy Schiff's Cleopatra, A Life, and Christoph Schaefer's interview with Melissa Gray for CNN. I also found the site ancientegyptologyonline.co.uk quite helpful. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it, as well as subscribing and sharing. If you'd like to support me financially, you can head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened or click the link in the show notes. If you have any topics you'd like to hear me cover, or questions or comments about this or past stories, send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as STWHpodcast. And Caesar, opening the tablet where he found prayers and lamentations asking that she be buried with Antony, he quickly understood what had been done. To begin with, he set out himself to bring assistance. But then he sent men in order to investigate as quickly as possible. But swift suffering had occurred. For coming at a run and finding that the guards had perceived nothing, opening the doors, they found her lying dead on a golden couch, arrayed as a queen. Plutarch.